You know, if you'll bow down to it, sacrifice anything for it, work so hard for it, devote your life to it, it takes on the category of an idol or of a god. And that's what people do with money. They'll sacrifice, they'll steal, they'll lie, they'll cheat. Some people will sell themselves, they'll sell their children, they'll sell things necessary to get it. So when people worship it, it's sort of not surprising that the word money, of all things, came from the name of a goddess. This particular deity was named Juno Regina, R-E-G-I-N-A. She was looked upon by the Romans as the wife of Jupiter and the queen of heaven. She was worshipped as a genius and a protector of mankind. Finally, when the ancient Romans began coining money, they set up their mint in the temple of the goddess on the Capitol Hill, sort of the Capitoline Hill. And so under the name of Juno Moneta, she became the guardian of finances. I made her now the guardian of finances. She's a guardian of mankind. Now she's guarding the finances. And from the Latin word moneta, by the change of spelling, it came to us finally through the French language for the word money. And we received our present word money. You ever walk into a bank, the place where all the money's supposed to be? And what's it look like? All their ornate columns, and it's, you know, very staid. And you walk into this, and you kind of look around. Everything's beautiful, nice, beautiful walls. And many old banks, they had beautiful columns in them. And the banks sort of were ornate like a temple, because the first bankers were priests way back in ancient Babylonia, some 4,000 years ago. They made loans, if you had the collateral to put up. They had vaults where they kept and stored documents, goods, and other valuables, and they accepted deposits. They advanced money, business ventures, and they took their share of the profits. And if you were a farmer, they attached your crops to the loans. This is ancient Babylonia. So our banking system has come down a long way in history. Now we come to the history of the word bank as an interesting record. The Egyptian bankers and even the earliest English money changers did their business sitting on a bench. The bench was usually placed in the courtyard or on the steps of a temple. You wonder why Jesus, when he came to the temple, what did he see? The money changers. What's another name for when you want to change money? Where do you go? You go to a bank. These were the people sitting. Well, they had their little benches. They had their money changing things. And this is what infuriated Jesus, that you're doing this business of money changing right here on the outskirts, on the steps of the temple of God. And he said, don't make my father's house a house of merchandise. So he drove the money changers away. But in Italian, the word for bench was banca, B-A-N-C-A. And with various historical shifts, we get our word bank. There's a word for broken, like the word rupt, R-U-P-T, means broken. Erupt, something that erupts. To disrupt something is to break it, right? You can have a rupture. That's a break in your body somewhere. You've ruptured some muscles. You break in your muscles. Well, when you're bankrupt, it meant your bench was broken. And now we use the word bankrupt, meaning you're out of money. You're out of the favor of the bank. So a lot of these terms, these words that we have for money have come down a long way. History shows, and people walked around, I mentioned originally, with cows, and they bartered money. But the cows became so so heavy and so difficult that, you know, let's make coins and they've something that you could carry around more easily in exchange for goods. Oh, there's another interesting word that goes way back in the Roman times, and the word is calculate. You calculate something. Why do we use the word calculate when you want to calculate your profits, you calculate your debts, you calculate your sums of money? How do you, we use the word, and we have the word calculator on things. What do? You have a, you give me this calculator. You know where that comes from? Well, in the ancient Roman times, if you wanted to take a Roman, in those days it would be a Roman chariot for your taxi to take you somewhere, you got in the chariot. There was a little tin cup, and there was a little wheel above it where you had a tin cup where it spun, and when it spun over and the two holes, there was a little hole where it dripped down into another cup, so you had a bunch of stones, little pebbles, and as the chariot wheel moved, it moved this little thing around and around, and when the two holes synchronized, a pebble would drop through. So as you rode the chariot, so many pebbles would drop through. That's the first taxi meter in the world that was back in ancient Roman times. And by the way, they did have tin back there. And they had this tin thing. And so as you walked, you would then take the number of stones and count them. That would be calculating your amount that you owed the taxi driver or the chariot driver. The word for stone is calculus. The word for stone is calculus. So because of those stones, you counted them, and that's where we get our word calculate. It has nothing to do with stones today. It has only to do with summing up, adding up, figuring up, calculating how much it's going to be when you're in debt. We asked the question, why are some people poor and other people rich? One of the things we found last time was that if you love pleasure, he that loves pleasure, now not the person that likes pleasure, if you like a little bit of pleasure, that's fine. But if you love pleasure, that is, I'll give anything for it, I'll do anything for it, you will be a poor man. He that loves wine and oil cannot or will not be rich. But there are other reasons why people who, they want this, they chase after it. Listen to this proverb in chapter 13, Proverbs 13, verse 11. Wealth gained quickly. I'm reading from the New International, the New English translation. Wealth gained quickly will dwindle away, but the one who gathers it little by little will become rich. In the New American Standard Version, it reads like this: wealth obtained by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases it. Now, the word Hebrew word there can be quickly, gained quickly, can imply by fraud, but it also means quickly. You just get it so fast. Well, you know the idea, easy come, easy go, right? I got it quickly. I didn't have to work too hard for it. It came very fast. So guess what happens with it? Things that come fast, go fast. Proverbs 28 and verse 22. He who is greedy rushes after riches, not knowing that want will overtake him. Let me read that in the Christian Standard Bible. It goes like this: a greedy man is in a hurry for wealth. He doesn't know that poverty will come to him. Poverty. You go running after wealth. What's going to happen when you're running after wealth? What happens? You're not careful. You're not careful. You fall for schemes. You fall for ideas. You fall for fallacies. You fall for things that are not true. And you overlook the details. Boy, the world is, the stories are strewn, you know. If we could just pull up everybody's story, somebody went after this and they went after that real quickly. They didn't check on that. They didn't check on that. And they lost money. They went after it, and they lost. A greedy man is in a hurry for wealth. He doesn't know that poverty will come to him. But the Bible talks about if you earn the money, little by little, you get your money and you earn it little by little. You save it. You make it it lasts longer. Now, here's an observation the Bible makes. Here's an observation. This is in Proverbs 22. It's not a statement that it should be this way. It's just an observation that it is this way. Proverbs 22 and verse 7. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower becomes the lender's slave. Let me put it in the New English translation. The rich rule over the poor. That doesn't mean that they should. It just means that they do. Why do they? Because if you're poor, you go to a rich person, he's got the money. What is money? It is a form of power, is it not? Money is power. Money gives you a lot more freedom. It has power. If you don't have it, you have less power. You want money in order to have some power. So the rich rule over the poor. The borrower is a servant to the lender. Well, yeah. Okay, well, I borrowed from you. Now I got to pay you back. And now I keep working to pay you back. I keep working. I've got to give it back to you. I'm now working for you, working to pay you back. I'm now your servant. That's just an observation. Now, the Bible values, it puts a lot of value on a four-letter word, and that's W-O-R-K, work. According to the Bible, there is one thing and one thing only that produces real wealth and prosperity. One thing and one thing only, and that's work. That's why the Bible has, because part of the seventh day Sabbath command is 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. But on the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. On that day you shall rest from your labors. You shall observe it to keep it holy. The Sabbath is there for you to rest. And so the Bible really endorses a six-day work day, work week. Now, you don't have to labor at a job to work, but, you know, we all work. I don't know about you, but you know, even when I'm not working at my work, you're working around the house, you're putting stuff away, you're doing things, you got to work. You got to do your laundry, you got to put stuff away, clean the house, mow the lawn, do this, do that, make sure things are done, take care of your car, all kinds of work. This is Proverbs 14, verse 23. I'm going to read it in English, and then I'll read you how the Hebrew would be if you didn't put in extra words. This is Proverbs 14, verse 23, New American Standard Version. In all labor there is profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. In all labor there's profit, mere talk leads to poverty. Now, let me read that in the Hebrew, the way the Hebrew would read it. It goes like this. Hebrew kind of like is very short. In all hard work, abundance. But words from the lips, things needed. You're going to need things, poverty. Words don't accomplish much. In a sense of work, they don't do it. You can say a lot. Well, I plan to get up and mow the lawn. You can say it 100 times. The lawn doesn't get mowed. You can say, I'm going to plant my garden 100 times, 10,000 times. It doesn't get done. In all work, there is profit. But the words of the lips lead only to poverty. Proverbs 13 and verse 4. Because work is profitable, the opposite of work is condemned. Proverbs 13 verse 4. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat. So if work is the way for prosperity, what is the opposite? Laziness, sluggishness. Proverbs 13 and verse 4 from the New English Translation. The appetite of the sluggard craves. He wants something. I really want it. But he gets nothing because he doesn't do anything. But the desire of the diligent will be abundantly satisfied. Diligent. I'm going to get up. Consistency. Diligent. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to work at this. I'm going to keep plodding at it. So poverty versus prosperity. There are a number of reasons. We already saw it. Love of pleasure, love of the good life, too much of it. In other words, I'm willing to spend all kinds of money for the good life, whether it makes sense or not. That's going to put you in poverty. But here is another one. Proverbs 28, verse 19. The one who works his land. If we are translated today, the one who works his land, you might say, takes advantage of his opportunities, will have plenty of food. But whoever chases fantasies, I'm reading this from the Christian Standard Bible, whoever chases fantasies will have his fill of poverty. The one who works his land. I got something to do. Here's my opportunity. Here's what I can do. I'm going to work this. He'll have plenty of bread. But the one who chases after fantasies, what will he have? His fill of poverty. Let me read that in English Revised Version. He that tills his land shall have plenty of bread, but he that follows after vain persons shall have poverty enough. In the English Standard Bible, it goes like this. Whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits. See, the word is vain or worthless. And some people think it means persons. Some think it means ideas. Worthless ideas or pursuits will have plenty of poverty. There's one way, and one way only, to establish wealth, and that is through the medium of work. Now, you can be careless and indifferent to things. Listen to this one in Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 4. Poor is he who works with a negligent hand. Negligent. What happens to me if I'm negligent? Oh, I forgot to put oil in the car, burned up the motor. Oh, I forgot to take care of that and fix that, and now it's ruined that whole thing. Oh, I forgot to, you know, bring those things in from the garden, and now they're rusted. Oh, I left this running, and it burned it all up. Listen, the poor is he who works with a negligent hand, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Diligent. I remember what I have to do. I go out and do it. Hey, that needed taking care of. I'm going to do it now. Hey, I can't wait on this. It's going to ruin this machine if I don't take care of it. Hey, I've got to get after this or it's going to break and it's going to cost me more money down the road. I need to fix this. I need to get a tune-up because my car is doing this. I don't want to ruin the engine. I've got to do things. The hand of the diligent makes rich. Negligence will put you in severe costs of lots of dollars and on your way to poverty. Proverbs 18, verse 9. He also that is slothful in his work. This is the King James Version now. He that also that is slothful in his work is a brother to him that is a great waster. Now the King James translates this word waster in Proverbs 18, verse 9, but it translates this same Hebrew word in other places 96 times as destroyer. Most other translations translate this word destroyer. So let me read it in the New American Standard Version. He also who is slack in his work is brother to him who destroys. King James couldn't figure out how, it would be destroying something, but you're a brother to the destroyer. Let me read that in the New English Translation. The one who is slack in his work is a brother to one who destroys. If you're slack in your work, you're not diligent with you. You're not careful with what you do. Did you ever see people who are not careful with what they do? And they break it. It breaks because you didn't take care of it. You weren't careful. Well, what's the difference between whether you threw it on there and broke it or you're not careful and you sat on it and broke it? You know what I mean? If you're not careful and you step on a very valuable piece of equipment and you break it, it's the same thing. He that is slack in his work, he's not watching what he does. He's not careful. You might as well destroy it, because it's going to be broken. Then the Bible refers, because it puts so much emphasis on work, that a lazy person, a person who is a sluggard, lazy person. Here in the New American Standard, we have in Proverbs 12, verse 27, it just plainly says it. A lazy man does not roast his prey, but the precious possession of a man is diligence. The precious possession of a person is diligence. You say, I'm diligent. I take care of it. I'll get to it. I'll work at it. That's diligence. Let me read that in the New English Translation. The lazy person does not roast his prey, but personal possessions are precious to the diligent. That's how they, personal possessions. But the precious possessions of a man is diligence. So it can be either way. But in other words, the precious personal possessions are precious to the diligent. In other words, if I have something of value, you're a diligent person, you have something of value, what do you do with it? You're diligent. Take care of it, you put it away, you clean it up, you make sure it's right. You're always careful with it. But the lazy person doesn't roast what he found even. He won't even roast what is his. So it's a precious thing to have a roast, and he won't roast the prey. The lazy man does not complete, in other words, the implication here is that the lazy man does not complete the project, and the game that he killed goes to waste or is destroyed because he won't, he went out and hunted. You go out and you come, bang, I shot a deer, okay? I bring it home and I leave it for a while and I don't roast it right away. What happens after a while? You don't finish the project, it wastes, it becomes destroyed. Proverbs 18, verse 9. He who does not give his mind to his work is a brother to him who makes destruction. We're still on that, he who is slack in his work. This is the Bible in basic English. This is how they translate Proverbs 18, verse 9. He who does not give his mind to his work is a brother to him who makes destruction. Let me read that in the complete Jewish Bible. Whoever is lazy in doing his work is a brother to the destroyer. Christian Standard Bible. The one who is truly lazy in his work is a brother to a vandal. The English Revised Version. He who also that is slack in his work is brother to him that is a destroyer. All of them understand it doesn't mean a waster. It means a destroyer, because you're in effect destroying things because you're not careful. You're lazy. You're too slack in your work. Years ago, the famous newscaster Paul Harvey said it like this. He put this word. The dollar does less for us because we do less for it. You know, when I was a kid, we worked at a service station, and I've told a number of clients, I said, you know what I used to do for a dollar? For $1, I would come out, people had a flat tire. We would come out, bring the jack up the, undo some of the lugs, then jack up the car, pull the tire off, go in and take and pull it over, crunch it because it used to have inner tubes in it, pull the inner tube out, put air in the inner tube, put it in a tub of water to find out where the leak was, get that done, then dry it off. And then we had these sealants, these little patches that we put over the leak in the inner tube, put it back in, make sure you took the nail out of the tire now, put it back in the tire, blow it back up, take it over, put it back, on the wheel, and then take it over and put it on the thing and put the hubcaps on. I'd do all that, and the person would ask you, how much? I'd say $1. $1. That's what you did for a dollar. But you know what a dollar would do? It would buy me four lunches at a restaurant in our town. Now, they were chicken fried steak lunches. You know, they were not the grandiose lunches. But for chicken fried steak, a drink, and something like that, you could get for a quarter. So the dollar does less for us because we do less for it. That if you had to go out and work that hard for a dollar, think of how you would value it. Think of how your children would value it if you worked that hard for a dollar. In other words, the proverb means money gained without work will diminish quickly because it has come so easily and it's not as valued. When you work hard for it, you value it. Somebody says, for all that work, you know, a dollar was very precious to me. I knew what a dollar meant in actual work and energy. Proverbs 6, beginning in verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief or officer or ruler. Ants don't have the queen bee. You know, in the bees, they have a queen bee. The queen bee kind of gets everybody going, and if you don't have a good queen, they usually replace it because having a good queen, you'll get a lot more honey. So the queen bee is there, but the ant doesn't have that. They don't have a big ruler that tells them what to do. Having no officer, chief, or ruler, she prepares her food in the summer. She gathers her provision in the harvest. So she knows. Winter's coming. Let's get it so we can go down underground, the subterranean, and then we can eat for a long time. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber. A little folding of the hands to rest, your poverty will come like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. So when it's time to get up, now he's talking about, no, is the Bible against a good night's sleep? No. Is it? No, it's not against that. What it's talking about, when it's time to get up, when it's time to go to work, when it's time for you to get out there and do what you need to do, because it's harvest time, whatever it is, then if you fold the hands and sleep and turn over, your poverty will come like an armed man, like a vagabond, like somebody on the road toward you. In Psalm 104, verse 23, the Bible says this, man goes forth to his work and to his labor until evening. In the old days, and by the way, we slept better in those days. People slept better when they got up, when the sun came up, and they went to bed pretty much shortly after the sun went down. They got up when the sun came up, and you know that that's the way God has made the brain? God has made your brain to function. So when Thomas Edison came up with the electric light bulb, he brought in a lot of insomnia with it. People don't sleep as well because they stay looking at the lights. And there's something that happens to your eyes when you look at light. That light stimulates through your optic nerve, even though you see with it, through your optic nerve, it stimulates a little bit of cortisol, which is your energy-producing neurotransmitter. And that stimulation makes you feel like, I got to get up, I got to do things. If you watch television, you got all the bright lights on in the house, and then you finally go to sleep, you get in bed for a while and toss and turn for a while because your brain will not tend to shut off very easily. And then finally, after a little bit of darkness, and the darker your room, the better, a little bit of darkness, you'll start bringing up the melatonin starts to flow, and you'll start relaxing, and you get away from the cortisol. Cortisol is the number one neurotransmitter in your body. You know what I mean by cortisol? It's what's produced when you're under stress. You're stressed, cortisol comes up. It makes you alert if something happens. But that cortisol is your life-saving chemical in your brain. It's the lifesaver. You don't have cortisol, you could die. Cortisol will jump you up. If you have smell fire, and man, you jump up like that, you're ready to alert, you're ready to go, your brain is alert as to what you got to do to get out of there, and it makes you, saves your life. However, when it's overdone, it will destroy your life. It saves your life because it gets you up in action. But if you've got too much cortisol because you're under stress, or because a lot of us think things are important that are just not important in life, and we fret over it, and we stress over it, and we get all upset over it, and it's not important. And therefore, we keep generating cortisol for no reason, not saving our life or anybody else's. We make ourselves nervous. We make ourselves upset. What happens then is that as the lights go down, you get up when the sun comes up all day. Then you notice how darkness comes on us. You don't go from bright light to darkness. See, in here, if it were nighttime, we'd have all these lights on. Somebody could go in here and click the switch, and all of a sudden we'd go from bright lights, darkness. You can't see, right? Darkness. Well, that's not the way God says it. That's not the way God set the light in the sky. The way the sun sets is that it starts to get little less and less. And after a while, you start seeing it's kind of dusk. And you can see, but the sun is getting down further, and the rays of the sun kind of diminish, and the lights go down a little at a time, like a dimmer switch. And it just keeps getting dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and dimmer until what? Pretty soon it's dark. Now, you live out on a farm somewhere, and if there's not a full moon or something, listen, it gets dark. There are no street lamps, no street lights, no buildings out here, no restaurants with all night lighting, no signs, no, you know, it's just dark. Bless those people in the rural areas of Arkansas, Pennsylvania, Ohio, all these rural places, you know, Mississippi, and so where it gets dark, it's dark. They go in, they lie down, and they're out like a light. Especially if they've been working in the sunlight. They've been working outside, you know, they've got to plant food, they got to haul, you know, shovel and things, they got to, you know, rake, and they got to pitch their hay, and they got to, you know, bale their hay and, you know, harvest their crops and so on. They're tired at the end of a day. And as that sun goes down, they just kind of get tired. They get ready to go to sleep, and they go to sleep. That's the way it has been. So here's the Bible. And Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 30. I passed by the field of the sluggard, and by the vineyard of a man lacking sense. And behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Overgrown with thistles. The surface was covered with nettles, and its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I reflected upon it. This is the writer of the Proverbs here. You know, this he wrote this. I looked, and I received instruction. I said, well, what's going on here? You know, look at this. His land is overgrown with thistles, covered with nettles. Stone wall is broken down. I got to think, what's going on here? Why is this? And then he said to himself in verse 33, the same thing that was said in Proverbs 6, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, then your poverty will come as a robber and your want like an armed man. So here's the sluggard has this place. He's not taking care of it. It's all broken down. He doesn't repair the wall. He doesn't plow up the nettles. He's not out there taking out the things that are the thistles that are growing. He just leaves it. He leaves it, and he leaves it, and he leaves it. Believe me, I don't know about in these days, in those days of the writer of the Proverbs, but today we have a lot of people that are so drugged off. They're drugged up by medication drugs, by their doctor's drugs. They're drugged up by illicit drugs, marijuana. I've talked to a number of clients. They smoke marijuana. They smoke it and they smoke it. And they don't have much gumption. Many of them just, you know, they just like to be high. It's very sad. You know, there are studies on work. And work has a certain dignity of value. After all, you know, you will pay me for my talent, my ability, my brain, my skills. If you pay me a certain amount, I have more value, you see. When somebody says, look, I'll pay you $25 an hour if you'll do this work. Well, that you'll say, wow, okay. And your value goes up, doesn't it? If people will pay you for it, what is your value? If nobody wants you, no, I don't, you don't want to want you. You know, no, you can't do anything. I don't want your skill. What do you know? I don't know anything. Well, what is your skill? I don't have any skills. Well, we don't want you. Well, then, does that make you feel good? Does it make you feel good? No. If you have, well, yeah, I've had a lot of experience in sales. Yes, I can learn fast. I can learn the equipment. I can show people how to do it. Yes, I can. I know how to repair this. Yes, I know how to deal with this. Yes, I know how to solve this. I can type. I can write. I can do PowerPoint. I can do this. I can do that. I have skills. I have saleable skills. It makes you feel more valuable. You see, this is what's important, the dignity of work. And there are a lot of studies on the psychology of work, of different professions of work. You know, we kind of have a hierarchy of professions, you know. You're going to be a doctor, lawyer, an Indian chief. You know, they have all these various... Because there are a hierarchy of professions, but all work is honorable. Listen, do never belittle a person who is a custodian in a building. Never. That person is honorable. He's doing a work. Somebody's got to do it. He's doing it or she's doing it. Never belittle it. It's not right. And your job is not any better than their job. My job as, you know, in my profession is not better than that person's job. Somebody's got to do that work in our society because we're all integrated. As a society, somebody needs to clean that building. Somebody needs to do it. He's doing it. It's honorable work. I never belittle somebody because of their job. I honor them because they're working. Now, I've had janitorial jobs, so I know what it is to be a janitor. I have been a janitor. I have cleaned the floors. I have scrubbed the toilets. I have put in towels. I have done that work. So I know what it is. I never belittle a janitor because he may end up going to school and advancing him. I never thought I was going to stay a janitor, but, you know, but even if he did, what difference does it make? It's honorable. All work is honorable. And the way to prosperity is through work. 6 days shall you work and labor, get all your labor done and your work done. And the seventh day is the time to rest. If you're resting while it's time for work, your poverty will come like an armed man. Imagine somebody with a gun coming to your house, armed man. That's how your poverty comes. We'll talk more about the ideas of poverty, riches, and what the Bible says about economics in our next sermon.